met Julie at a bar. She was drinking alone at a table in the back. She kept exchanging glances at me every few minutes, so I kept returning a smile. I walked over and introduced myself. My eyes were drawn to the scar on her neck. It looked almost like a faded barcode. When she noticed me staring for too long, she grabbed my arm to pull me towards the seat across from her. We hit it off immediately. Julie lived alone in an apartment that was just a few miles from the house I had recently purchased. This proximity to each other allowed us to date frequently. Our interests were aligned, which certainly helped us ease our way into each other's comfort zones. We both loved outdoor activities, such as hiking and kayaking, but we also appreciated the quieter moments inside, where we snuggled up on the couch and watched TV. Julie had a thing for old school cartoons. You know, the ones where chaos ensues between characters as they chase each other around for the entire episode. 5 months into our relationship, I asked Julie to move in with me. Even though we had hooked up, we never officially spent the night at each other's places. One of us always returned home before going to sleep. You cannot blame someone for wanting to take it slow. I understood. At the same time though, I was falling in love, and I was ready to take it to that next level. She agreed to move in with me under one condition, that we sleep in separate rooms. As deflating as that was to hear, I respected her wish. As our first night living together was approaching the bedtime hours, Julie lifted herself from the couch and gave me a small peck on the cheek. "No coming in my room tonight. I mean it. I'll see you in the morning, babe." I know, I know. I was beyond excited to be living together, so I had trouble sleeping during the first night. After tossing and turning for an hour, I heard a noise from Julie's room next door, a slight tapping on the wall followed by footsteps. I did not want to spook her and barge in, so I stayed in bed and tried to ignore it. The tapping continued for 2 hours. I eventually fell asleep and refrained from discussing it with her the next morning. But then the noises returned on the second night. I tiptoed out of the room and slowly opened her bedroom door. There she was on my left, standing inches away from the wall, completely silent, eyes open. She had no idea I was present. She just stood there for 2 minutes, and I didn't say a word. My own skin shivered when she turned and made eye contact with me as my head jutted just inside her room. I froze. I had heard about people who sleepwalked, and my understanding was that you should just let them do their thing and not startle them. I remained still until Julie crawled back into her bed. "Thinking you were sleepwalking last night? Do you remember?" I asked during breakfast. "Did you come inside my room? I specifically told you not to. I'm sorry, but all the noise was scaring me." "It's okay. I should have been upfront with you about it. It's just something I do sometimes. I just don't want you to get hurt, though. It is dangerous to be near a sleepwalker. Hope you can understand." I nodded and hugged her. On night 3, I made a mistake. Julie was asleep, but I remembered I had left my glasses on her bedside table. I wasn't quite ready to go to bed myself, so I figured I could quietly make my way inside without waking her. She did not flinch as I reached near her. Only problem was, I forgot to close the door on the way out. After hitting the hay later that night, I felt an immense weight on my body. I woke up to Julie sitting on top of me.
"Julie, are you okay?"
I whispered. I lifted my head to get a better look at her. In her left hand, she was holding what appeared to be at least from my tired vision, a hammer. Julie's gaze remained firmly on my face as I tried to remove my right arm from under the blankets. Julie must have sensed too much movement from me.
"Found you!" she shouted.
Julie raised the hammer, and as she brought it into the air, I realized it was one of those meat mallet hammers. I was about to turn my head just enough to avoid the direct shot to my face, but she did connect with my right cheek, making me cough up a few bloody teeth. I shoved her off the bed before she landed another blow. I grabbed my phone and ran out. Julie did not follow me. She stayed inside. When I walked back inside with a police officer, we found Julie asleep in her bed. I shook her shoulder and woke her up. Julie had no recollection of what she had done. She apologized over and over, crying in my arms. I told the officer I would be okay, but he could leave. I was too rattled from the incident though to sleep in the same house as her. I told her I would get a motel room for a few nights to think things over, while she stayed put. While I was at the motel, I did some research online to see if I could dig up anything on Julie that might help me better understand any trauma she may have experienced in the past. I messaged a handful of her friends I found through social media to tell them what happened. I had messaged one guy that seemed to appear in a large volume of photos with Julie. I found out he was actually one of her doctors, Dr. Perkins. He agreed to speak with me on the phone. What I learned sent a chill down my spine. Julie had almost killed a man the exact same way she attacked me. The man was able to grab the meat hammer from her though, and he ended up connecting with her neck, hence the scar. Dr. Perkins told me that from his observations of her, Julie had a fear of moving objects while she was in her sleepwalking state. He pleaded with me to have her move out. He said it was not safe to live together. I was torn. On one hand, I still cared for her, but on the other hand, she almost killed me. In the end, I followed Dr. Perkins' advice. Julie, frazzled and heartbroken about the breakup, moved back into an apartment, alone. Somehow, we have remained decent friends. I still check up on her occasionally to see how she's doing. Of course, she tells me everything is just fine.